I admit that in the past I've been a nasty. They weren't kidding when they called me, well, a witch. But you'll find that nowadays I've mended all my ways, repented, seen the light, and made a switch. True, yes.
Hello and welcome to Words and Pictures, the comics and animation show. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and today I'm joined by one of the great American animators working today. She's brought characters to life in such films as The Little Mermaid, The Black Cauldron, How to Train Your Dragon, and Frozen. And she's been called the queen of animated villains. Kathy Zielinski, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So at Disney, you animated Ursula the Sea Witch in The Little Mermaid and Jafar in Aladdin, and you were the supervising animator for the character of Frollo in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. I don't think we need to do much justifying here. Everyone loves the villains. They have the best songs, for one thing.
Yes, yeah. Hellfire was an amazing song, and when they wrote that song, I thought, wow, this is so intense and powerful. It's going to be an amazing situation to animate to that song. And then Ursula, Poor Unfortunate Souls, was really a treat to animate, too.
Well, she had tentacles, and all animators just love to draw tentacles. It's like such a great challenge.
Yes, because you can do so much overlap with them and, you know, use them to grab people and, you know, move around. It's a really great prop to use.
Have you watched some of those online videos of octopuses getting themselves out of jars and out of aquariums and
yes,
things?
Yes. It's just amazing what a tiny space it can fit into this big octopus. Yeah, yeah. But I did a lot of studying of octopuses for Little Mermaid. You just watch stuff frame by frame and kind of get an idea of how the tentacles move. And yeah, they're very pliable.
Well, I remember seeing some of the old Disney films of the early days when they would bring in, you know, deer and other animals to and have life drawing sessions with the animators in the studio. But yes, so Disney, I assume, is still very serious about making sure that everything looks convincing.
Yes. You know, I know that they try to shoot a lot of live action for their characters. And well, when I was working there on The Rescuers Down Under, they actually bought a monitor lizard. And myself and Dave Cutler, another supervising animator, we had the monitor lizard in our office so we could look over and, you know, study how the monitor lizard moved. And that helped a lot with Joanna.
Okay, that film. Yeah. Now, I want to dial back a little bit. Disney Studios recruited you in the early 80s to work on Mickey's Christmas Carol.
Yes.
And so you came in really just as the studio was heading into its new golden age of the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. It basically, I was at CalArts. I had done a film that they saw and they were interested in bringing me in. And they brought about another 10 artists in at the same time. And it was kind of interesting. Our first few days of working there, they actually had a film crew following us around and documenting, oh, this is the new generation. Because at that time, most of the nine old men had left. The only one that was left there was Eric Larson.
Right.
Yeah, so it was a little surprising to have that happen, but pretty neat, you know, that they were recording us.
Right. You mentioned CalArts, the California Institute of the Arts. And yeah, you were one of the first women in the animation program there, I understand. And,
yes.
And your sophomore year film, Guess Who's for Dinner, won the Student Academy Award.
Yeah, and that was quite a nice surprise. And yeah, it was a film about a child who discovers his spinach is really a monster. And his mom, who's kind of oblivious to the whole thing, tells him to shut up and eat it. You know, he's trying to tell her, hey, you know, no, this is a monster. And she just thinks he's trying to get out of eating his spinach. So it's kind of a fun little film, and he's very villainous looking, and so I enjoyed animating him.
Right, and at Disney, well, Disney is pretty well known for picking up people straight out of CalArts, but you actually got an early start in the animation industry as a teenager. You picked up a gig at Filmation Productions. They're probably best known for Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Yes.
So what was your, I mean, you were what, 19 when you started there?
Yeah, actually, I'm really surprised you know that. I forgot about that. but yeah, no, I just, I picked up freelance there because it was sort of in between school years, mm-hmm. between our freshman and sophomore year. So yeah, I think I worked on The Lone Ranger. So I was doing some animation and cleanup for them.
And that between. That's very limited animation. That was
yes,
for,
very
for
limited.
And so I'm wondering if this is where you, because I saw in your student film, you used a bit of the mid-century modern style of animation. That was the style that was popular at the UPA studios, the Mr. Magoo shorts, and at Jay Ward Productions, where the Bullwinkle show was produced. A little bit in the title sequence, for example.
Oh, yeah, for the title sequence. Well, the title sequence had cutout paper animation done in it. And we had a class by a teacher, his name was Bill Moore, and he had most of our assignments were done in cutout paper. And so that's sort of where I got the idea to do the title sequence, was using some of the things that we learned in color and design. So, yeah, it was kind of fun to do something, a title sequence that was different from the rest of the short, which was just hand-drawn pencil on paper.
Right, and in Pixar nowadays, they really like that style in their title sequences, like Monsters, Inc. It's really a throwback to that
yeah,
era.
Yeah, and I think, well, you know, a lot of those guys like John Lasseter went to CalArts, so he had Bill Moore as well. So it's kind of a cool medium cutout paper, you know, making that animate. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it's a nice stylistic change to see in a film.
Well, you were at DreamWorks and you were at some other studios, and you're back at Disney now. You came back just in time to work on Frozen, and that was a big hit.
Yeah, I actually just helped out sort of because at the very tail end, I just helped out about 6 months on that film. They were well into animating it, and they just needed some help. But, you know, it was very exciting, very fun to work on that film. And it, you know, I guess I had been working on it for a while. I never saw it through all the different stages that it went through. But, you know, by the time I came on, the whole story was nailed. And so most of the problems were solved. And so it was kind of nice to walk onto a production and then we could just kind of help them finish it out.
It had so many of the traditional elements of a Disney film, the princess, the songs, all of the supporting characters, but it definitely updated some things for the 21st century.
Yeah, I think that's probably why audiences really like it. And girls love princesses, and even though they weren't princesses. Oh, wait, no, well, Elsa was, but I think they just love the songs and that, and that really attracted them to that film.
Now, you have a daughter, is that right?
Yeah, I have two.
So are they a little old for that, or are they still kind of interested in the...
Well, I think they like more edgier stuff. I think my older daughter might have liked that, but I think they were more into other types of animation. I think they enjoy Miyazaki stuff a little bit more. But they do still love a lot of animation. They're not very girly girls. So I think, you know, they weren't into that film as much.
So you guys like to go off on adventure travels and things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just got back from Japan with my older daughter.
Oh, wow. So did you get to visit Studio Ghibli? And
I did not. No. And I was so upset because, I don't know about the physical studio where everybody works, but there's a museum there. And it was closed for restoration for like the next 2 months. So unfortunately, I missed that. But I did, if I was going to go over there for the museum, I was going to try to see about seeing the studio as well. So, yeah, I'm really sorry. I was very disappointed not to see that.
Well, one of the things that people say about Ghibli and about Miyazaki in particular, also some of the other great animators there like Isao Takahata, is that they don't just animate, they don't just bring the characters to life, they bring the landscapes to life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing the work that they do for the layouts and the line mileage on those characters is incredible. I mean, when I was working on Aladdin, I was the lead animator for Jafar is the genie, Jafar is a snake, and Jafar is the beggar. But with Jafar is a snake, I originally did design where he had a skull on the back of his cobra hood. And cleanup was thinking, well, this is too much line mileage, and I had extra stripes and some other details. So we had to take things off. But then I look at Miyazaki films, I'm like, wow, the amount of detail.
Grass
on those
blowing. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then, yeah, the background, the effects and the characters are just so heavy with line mileage. My hat's off to them, you know, amazing work that those guys do, that they can, you know, draw all that detail. So it's pretty neat.
You really made your name in the industry as a traditional 2D character animator, especially at Disney.
Mm-hmm.
But you, when you went to DreamWorks, you taught yourself the CGI tools, the computer-generated imagery tools. So you've definitely got that that crossover. Do you miss the traditional stuff? It doesn't seem to happen so much in the States anymore.
Terribly. Because the thing about hand-drawn animation is that it's more personal. You could tell who animated a scene. Usually, even though we were drawing the same characters, you could tell my style versus Glenn Keane's style versus Andrea's style. That was kind of neat about that. You could bring your art. It was art you were creating versus computer animation. You're just moving kind of elf. Almost feels like you're just moving puppets around, and you really can't tell who did what, because most computer animation is pretty good, but there's no style, you know, no personal style put into that. So, and I just love drawing. I mean, ever since I was a little girl, you know, I could just sit there for hours and draw. And so, you know, I do miss it terribly, but it'll be good to do it again.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm talking today with animator Kathy Zielinski. She's been called the Queen of Animated Villains for her work on Ursula the Sea Witch in The Little Mermaid and Jafar in Aladdin. When it comes to opening things up, encouraging diversity in the animation industry, do you think all the new technology helps or hinders things? Every kid draws, but not every kid has access to modeling and rendering software.
Yeah, it's tough because, there are, you know, certainly programs are cheaper. You can find cheaper programs out there. But it takes a long time to learn each of those programs. Like, you can't be a modeler, a rigger. I mean, it would be hard to be really good at each one of those things because you have to invest so much time to get really good at one thing. I have some skills, like I can model in ZBrush, but I started traditionally modeling in clay, so I had a sense of how to sculpt. So when I learned programs like Lightwave or ZBrush for modeling, I already kind of knew about modeling, but rigging would be very difficult for me. So, yeah, for kids, it's like making your own film. There are some things you can do, but if you're going to do like a CG film, I think that would be harder than doing a 2D animated film. 2D animated film you could probably do because you don't need to learn as many programs for something like that.
Well, you're mentioning working with clay. There are a number of studios nowadays, Leica right here in the Portland area, and Aardman in England, and many over in the Czech Republic, who still use model animation, puppet animation, armatures, as they say.
Yes.
And it's combined now with some CG computer-generated elements. So
yes,
you do have the possibility of having kind of a combination of the forms and still having a bit of that hand-hewn look to it.
In fact, actually, I was just at Leica the other day visiting Portland, and it was amazing and really inspiring to see all their work. And they talked about, you know, they have people doing 3D animation that will help one department, and then they, you know, sculpt and 3D print things, and then they have people doing the actual fabrication. And so it's, and then 2D on top of it, because I actually had some friends doing cleanup and 2D animation there as well. So it's kind of neat to see that combination. And I'm trying to think, you know, I guess 3D or like stop motion probably does that more than feature film. I mean, they might try to do a 2D look, but it'll be still done in the computer, versus Leica will actually use those other mediums.
Yeah, I think the hand-hewn look, both in 2D and 3D, is more common overseas, like Studio Ghibli in Japan, for example, the Miyazaki movies like My Neighbor Totoro. In Europe, especially Eastern Europe, there's a lot of craftsmanship. And yet, everybody is using computer tools, but they're using it in service of the craftsmanship or craftswomanship.
Yes.
speaking of which, you know, I have to ask, there was plenty of talk around the Academy Awards season about Hollywood still being a boys' club. And the animation industry is certainly not immune to that. I saw a study last year by the Animation Guild, which said that only 10% of all producers and directors are women.
Yeah, that's not surprising. From the days from when I was in school, I think, you know, there was like maybe class of 35 and only five women, I believe, were in my class. And I understand that maybe the percentage has grown a little bit. And I think women or young girls are interested in comic books more.
Right.
And that's a big thing. Like, I have two daughters, and they're very big into manga and comic books, which I never really was. And I don't know how many women in my age group were interested in that. I liked science fiction, Japanese monster movies, but I didn't really get into comic books. But I think, you know, with girls now being more interested in that thing, that's feeding into animation. I have several friends that teach at a school called Woodbury down in Los Angeles, and I think they said the percentage of women is greater at their animation school than men.
Really?
Which I was really surprised, but I don't know if that's across the board, like at CalArts or any other schools across the nation, but I was told that, and I was really surprised. But I think it's because of girls' interests in comic books now.
Right. I've noticed that webcomics especially is a great platform for young women. You see so much of their stuff, and the big traditional publishers are starting to take notice. Dark Horse has published a lot of women artists. And, you know, things are opening up in the animation front as well. As you said, we've got amazing animation directors like Marjan Satrapi and Joanna Quinn and Nina Paley, most of them coming from...
Brenda Chapman.
Brenda Chapman at Disney, of course, worked with her. I'll give a shout out to my mentor, Ellen Besson, with the National Film Board. But the big names, the really big names, still tend to be guys.
Yeah, and... There are very many, you know, great many talented women out there. Actually, working on Frozen, Chris Buck was a director along with Jennifer. I'm sorry, I can't remember her last name, but she was the co-director. She was great. She was spot on, really knew what she wanted. Mm-hmm. And because she was also a writer, I think she wrote as well on that. And so she knew exactly, you know, how those characters should act. She was a very strong director, and I believe that was her first directing film. So, you know, the talent is out there.
One of the quotes that I've heard is that animation isn't drawing, it's acting on paper. And, you know, there's so many great women working in the theater that that style of getting across the acting seems to be a natural thing that could really help things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the stronger you are at acting off screen, you know, it really helps your animation. You know, it's good to go to improv classes and theater classes if you can, because that'll just improve and open up your acting ability. And yeah, it'll just make you a better animator.
You know, we just had a Google Doodle dedicated to Lotte Reininger. She was credited with directing the very first animated feature. It's a silhouette puppet production called The Adventures of Prince Ahmed.
Oh, yeah?
And Reininger also invented the first ever multiplane camera, which was later made popular by the Fleischer brothers, you know, Betty Boop and all. Well, it sounds like things are really opening up at Disney. In the early days of the Disney studios, there were some very talented women, but they were mainly relegated to the ink and paint department. Some say Uncle Walt wanted to make sure they didn't get too ambitious and ruin their chances at marriage.
Oh, no.
I'll quote here from an early document. Women do not do any of the creative work in connection with preparing the cartoons for the screen, as that work is performed entirely by young men. For this reason, girls are not considered for the training school.
Oh, that's sad. But Mary Blair is, you know, certainly the exception to the rule. She was a fabulous art director there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, for that time period, you know, where most of the women went straight to the ink and paint department, I mean, he valued her very highly. And I mean, her work is still seen, you know, it's a small world ride at Disneyland. Those are her designs. And, you know, a lot of books you pick up about Disney animation, usually there's some inspirational work that she did on all the older features like Peter Pan, Alice in Wonderland. But they did have Retta Scott actually was an animator, and I think she worked on Lady and the Tramp. I think she did the dogs that were chasing Tramp at the end, if I recall correctly. I hope I'm right. But she was given a chance as well. And actually, when I first started at Disney, she was still there. So it was really neat to meet her.
I think Mary Blair might have changed, because Walt's attitude definitely changed. So I think She might have been a real big influence. You know, at the same time, though, I think what happened was a lot of women animators went the independent route, and especially in the 60s and 70s. You would see some really great, groundbreaking independent work. You know, people like Sally Cruikshank, for example.
Oh, yeah.
So let's see. You've been at a number of studios. You've sort of specialized also in drawing animals and making animals expressive. You animated Spirit, the lead in Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron.
Oh, actually, just to clarify, I was a super. Well, I don't know if I got supervisory credit on that, but James Baxter really was the supervising. I just want to make sure. Yeah, it doesn't get back that I was. But yeah, I did get a chance to have like a big chunk of animation on Spirit. I did the sequence where Spirit is kind of surprised at the interaction of Little Creek, I think the Indian's name was, and the female horse that he owned. And him just like wondering, what is going on with these two? You know, she's trusting a human. And so I got to do a lot of expressive animation through there. So I was really happy about that. And it's tough, you know, drawing horses that have emotions and expressions. So that was a fun opportunity to explore.
Yeah, you hear stories about, well, you were talking about the nine old men at Disney, the sort of legendary animation directors. And
yes.
One of them was Milt Kahl, who did so many of the animal characters in the Jungle Book. And he was just obsessive about getting not only the anatomy right, but also the expressions right, just getting that balance.
Oh, that guy is totally amazing. I mean, his skill of his drawing level, and he would draw so clean and be just perfect in his drawing. I mean, I wonder if he ever threw anything out. But yeah, I mean, he animated Shere Khan, and you have all those stripes. You have that tough anatomy of a cat. And it was just perfect the way he moved everything. And Ka, too, because he did some great stuff. I mean, the thing that was great about him is that he could do realism. He was such a great draftsman, but he had such a great comical timing and can do very extreme characters, comical characters as well. I mean, he was all around package for sure. And everybody, I think most people really idolize him and wish that, you know, he was still around and or they could draw like him. You know, he was just unbelievable talent.
Well, you mentioned the stripes on Shere Khan, the tiger in the Jungle Book. And this reminds me that sometimes, you know, animators just bite off it too much of a chunk. And I think I heard some stories when you were working on The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Frollo, the villain, the hypocritical religious authority, you designed a hat that became incredibly hard, and the animators were looking for opportunities to have the character take off the hat so you didn't have to
draw. They were just, everybody was complaining, God, that hat is so hard to draw. Why did she put so many stripes on this? Plus, it was a difficult shape. It was a triangular shape and had a scarf coming off the end of it. And yeah, I said to the directors, hey, what if we just lose the hat? Like because he's running around at the end of the film. And the directors were like, yeah, we could do that. That'd be cool. And so Oh, yeah, you watch the end where Frollo is running around, and the hat falls off, and you never see it again. So that's how we solve that
problem. You establish the hat, now you lose it.
Yeah, well, and unfortunately, most of the film had been animated by that point, but I think, most people had pulled out all their hair, and they were sick of it and complaining. So it did make it into three quarters of the film, but at least it saved, at the end, people didn't have to do it. There was a funny story, actually, with Hunchback about the sniffing scene. I know that's been mentioned in books and things like that.
Well, tell us about the sniffing scene.
The sniffing scene. The sniffing scene was Frollo sniffing Esmeralda's hair.
Ooh, creepy.
It was creepy. And
my girlfriend is a hairstylist, and she'll tell you, don't mess with somebody's hair.
Oh, don't sniff anybody's hair.
Unless you know them really, really well.
No, but there was a scene. It was basically Brenda Chapman, who was working on story at the time. She came up with the idea, and then I ended up animating it. So it was kind of two women coming up with this creepy thing. So you would have thought that might have been a male thing, but it was actually created by two women. So that's something that sometimes shows up on.
So that was to build the real nastiness of the character.
Frollo. Oh, yeah, the creepiness of that character. He basically had taken her arm and held it up behind her back. And so she was very vulnerable. And, he was lusting after her. So, he had her in a real tight squeeze. And his face was pushed right into her hair. And he was just sniffing it and enjoying it. And she was really creeped out about it. And the scene used to be a lot longer. I can't recall how many frames longer, but that film was going to get a PG-13.
Wow.
And Disney did not want a PG-13. So they said that was one scene that they actually had to cut down. But they didn't want to cut it, but we had to take the length of the sniffing in there because it got just a little bit much for the people at the ratings board. So that was kind of like an interesting thing that happened on that film.
Gosh, I wonder if there's a director's cut now with the longer
scene. Oh, I don't think so. I don't know, but that would be cool if they did.
Well, because Frollo is such a religious hypocrite, it seems very analogous to some of the modern day religious hypocrites who you find in sex scandals, after the fact.
Yeah. He was just so fun that the fact that he was lusting after her and that whole hellfire sequence. But yeah, that was like a key moment of him, him with her. That was pretty creepy.
So your own short film, Hide and Seek, this is something you're working on now. Do we know when that might be released or what plans you have for it?
Well, I'm always hoping as soon as possible. I've been working on it so long because, I changed the technology of it. Basically, when I was at CalArts, I had thought that I was going to be there a third year. And I went to Disney, and I still had that urge to want to make another film. So that's sort of how that began. And I was really into puppets at the time. And I had this large puppet that I made, and I thought, well, it'd be neat to do a film with that. So I built these 40-foot sets. They were huge, and I used to shoot them at the school. But then I kind of lost my contacts, like as people graduated, and I realized, well, maybe I should do this in miniature set form. So I built actually most of the film with miniature sets. And then, of course, along comes a computer, and I decide, well, oh, heck, it's going to look so much better in that. But I didn't waste all my time building those sets because we took pictures of the sets and the textures. So basically, we took those textures of all the paint job I did, and we mapped it onto the sets in the computer. So it has kind of like the same look. And so I keep improving my own skills. Like I can model in ZBrush now. And so I'm just going forward and still making it. But, it's finding the time. I had kids during the course of working on that film.
And there's a project.
Yeah, there's a project. So that took like 20 years. So, but I'd work on it. I still work on it, when I find time to work on it. And my husband, Kevin Kuchaver, is really great at helping me with parts of that film that I'm not able to achieve with effects and other parts of that. And
shout out to Kevin.
Yeah, shout out to Kevin, my husband's sitting here. But we work as a team together on that, so he's able to advise me on a lot of aspects of making that film. But I hope to get it done. You know, maybe within the next 5 years or so. That's always a hope.
Any other projects on the horizon?
Yes, I'm actually going to be going on to The Simpsons.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. After.
Oh, what are you doing for The Simpsons?
The Simpsons? I'm going to be an animator.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just finished my assignment. I was working actually in live-action television. I was working on The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Supergirl television shows. And, yeah, I have a dear friend, Mark Kirkland, who works at The Simpsons and who's been an amazing director there. I think he's directed close to 100 episodes. He's been there for 25 years. And he was really great about, you know, trying to get me to go to the studio. And so things have worked out. So I'm going to be going there. And so it'll be an interesting thing for me because, the first part of my career has been doing 2D hand-drawn animation up, you know, from the early 80s through the early 2000s. So from then to currently, you know, I've been doing CG animation. So now I'm going to go back to 2D animation, which will be a real fun thing, I think. I'm really looking forward to it.
I can see your eyes light
up. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, I get to draw again. But, you know, it'll be different from when I was an animator at Disney because I'm not going to be drawing on paper. I'm going to be actually drawing on a Cintiq.
A little tablet or kind of a big tablet,
well,
actually.
They'll have a big Cintiq set up for me. And I think they do their animation in Toon Boom Harmony. So that's going to be an interesting kind of challenge. But I love learning different things. So it'll be taking something that I already know and applying it to, you know, now doing it digitally.
Well, while you're in Portland, you'll have to bone up on all the Simpsons in-jokes here. Like
oh, okay.
Captain Cooch's treasure and things like that.
Oh, okay.
So many of the street names, pretty much every character is either a street name or a member of Matt Groening's extended family.
Oh, okay.
Like the Wiggums, for example. Well, that's exciting. I hope you'll come visit Portland again and tell us about all the new things that you've been working on at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I love Portland. Portland's a great town and beautiful city. Love the cycling up here and a lot of art. It's a very artsy town, so I really enjoy visiting up here.
Well, we hope to keep it that way.
Yeah, yeah. Keep Portland weird, right?
Yes, indeed. Well, tell us, are there any websites or blogs where people can find out more about your work?
Well, I have a Vimeo account.
Okay.
So if they went on Vimeo and typed in my name, Kathy Zielinski, they could find a lot of actually what we talked about today. They can find my 2D work, the whole Hellfire sequence I animated almost all Frollo and that. They can find a section of modeling some of the characters I've modeled, my independent film. So there's most of what I've done can be found that. And there's a Him and I site. My husband's company is Him and I Productions. And if they type in www.himandiproductions.com/Kathy Zielinski, they can find a lot of hand-drawn character designs on that page. That's not shown on Vimeo.
Well, that's exciting. Well, you've all been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm S.W. Conser, and my guest today has been animator Kathy Zielinski. Kathy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love Portland. This was fun. Thank you.
And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at kboo.fm. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.